Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Ayin Zayin. We started the 8th parak of the Masechta yesterday, continuation of the 7th parak. In the end of the 7th parak, we spoke about our second klal. 7th parak of the Masechta talked about klal gadol, talked about a large rule, and that was the beginning of the parak. And then the end of the parak was a secondary klal as well. The Mishnah is an Ayin He Amud Beis. The Mishnah tells us that there's another klal when it comes to Shabbos, and that is that in order to be subject to a chiyuv chatas by the malacha of hotzah, one has to carry. And how much one has to carry has to be a significant amount, both in quality and in quantity. That's the second general rule that we learned. And so with that Mishnah, the Mishnahs that follow are a sequence of all the items that have use and utility. And exactly how much of the item are you going to be chayv in order to, how much of the item, in terms of amount, is one going to be chayv karban chatas? The Mishnayos on Ayin Vav, which was yesterday's daf, which was the end of the 7th parak, talked about various feeds of animal, and what exactly is going to be considered a significant amount when it comes to the feeds of the animal. When the turn the amarin, you go to Ayin Vav Amud Beis, so we spoke about foods, and the various shirim when it comes to foods. And the Mishnah opens up with the 8th parak with a continuation of this very discussion. And we spoke about various liquids. The Mishnah spoke about wine and milk and honey and oil and water. And generally speaking, when it comes to mashkim, when it comes to liquids, the shear is going to be a revius. But for these liquids, because they have a usage which is smaller, so therefore the shear is going to be smaller. In tomorrow's daf, the Gemara is, in fact, going to go through what exactly are the rules and guidelines, meaning when do we get to a smaller shear, when do we stay at the larger shear of a revius. So the rules are going to be explained a little bit more in tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, however, we are going over the Gemara. We started the Gemara yesterday. We're going to go back. We're going to start again from the Gemara immediately after the Mishnah Tana. So we're starting on Ayin Vav Amud Beis. Kidei Mizigas Kos Yafeh. So how much wine are we talking about? The amount for dilution. My kos yafeh, kosha bracha. When we say kos yafeh, a good cup, what we mean is a cup of bracha. Rashi over here cites, for example, birchos hamazon. So for benching, you bench over a cup of wine, and the chachamim noted in the Gemara and Bracha in the 7th parak that there are a number of requirements with a kosha bracha. There are actually two listings over there of how many requirements there are when it comes to the kosha bracha of benching. One version has 10 requirements, another version has 4 requirements. Anyway, but one of the requirements is that it has to have a revius. It has to have a quarter of a log. Now, as we already explained yesterday, but let's just reiterate today, because it obviously becomes important just to understand their version of wine. So their version of wine was a very potent drink, almost like a syrup. When they made their wine, so it turned very syrupy. And in order to drink it, so it needed a dilution. What was the dilution ratio? So as we're going to see in just a moment, it was 3 parts water to 1 part wine. And so what the Gemara is now teaching us is that the amount that one is going to carry in order to violate the malacha of hotza'ah is going to be enough wine so that when it's diluted, it's going to get a revius. And since the ratio is 3 to 1, so that means that you need a quarter of a quarter of a log. All this we went over yesterday, and the Gemara now continues. Am Rav Nachman, Am Rava Baravua, Kosher Bracha Tzarech Sheyebo Rova Revius. The Kosher Bracha has to have a quarter of a quarter, as we just got done explaining. Kedei Shim Zigenu V'Yamod Al Revius. So that when in fact you dilute it, it's going to be a Revius. Am Rava Fanami Tanina. Rava says we learned the same thing in the Brice as well. Here actually it's the Mishnah. Hamotzi Yain Kedei Mizigas Kos. How much wine is one going to be carrying in order to be liable? A dilution's worth of wine, v'tini alam, and the Mishnah continues to say kedei mizigas kos yafeh. The Braisa says on this it has to be a good cup. V'ketani seifan, it says at the end v'shar kol hamashkim revius. Then when it comes to a mashke, it's going to be revius. So therefore, we're left to assume that the wine in total, meaning when diluted, is going to get to the point of revius, which means that the actual wine itself is only the amount necessary for the dilution, which is going to be a quarter of a revius. The Gemara continues. This is where we left off yesterday. The Rava Latame. Now this is Rava being consistent. Rava mentions this a number. The Gemara mentions this a number of times throughout Shas. If you're not pouring three parts water to your one part wine, that's not called wine. Meaning, as far as Rava's ratios are concerned, the ratio is going to be three parts water, one part wine. Amar Abai Sheshuvas, whatever Abai says, I got two issues over here. Number one, Chada, did none. We go back to the Mishnah in Nida, and the Mishnah in Nida tells us the following. For a woman to become a Nida, she has to have a discharge of blood, and the blood has to be red in color. If she discharges something else, and it's not, and even if it's blood, but it's not red in color, the woman is not going to be a Nida. Even the reds, it's not going to be all reds that are going to make a woman a Nida, but rather it's going to be five different reds. Truthfully, it's four reds and one black. The Mishnah, however, over there points to four specific shades of red. We, of course, no longer have the Masorah in terms of what exactly these shades of red are. We nowadays do not make any kind of discernment between one red versus another red. But according to the strict letter of the law, so it's only going to be four different shades of red that are going to make a woman a Nida. The Mishnah over there gives a description of the various shades of red. One of the shades of red is that it's going to be diluted wine. What is the diluted wine going to be? It's going to be two parts water to one part wine. So says the Mishnah in Nida. And Abai's question as he lays it out is that how can you, Rava, say that the ratio, that the mixture ratio is going to be three parts water to one part wine when meanwhile the Mishnah in Nida says that it's two parts water to one part wine? That's question number one. Va'od. And furthermore, Mayim bikad umitzarfin, and let's consider the following as well. You're telling me that if I take out the undiluted wine, I'm going to be chayav, because once I dilute, I'm going to get to a revius. Yeah, but that's future. In other words, right now, what do you have? You have right now just an undrinkable syrup of that wine. It's not yet diluted. How can you, this is Abai talking to Rava, how can you tell me that you're going to be subject to hotza'ah when you take out the wine, when meanwhile the wine is not yet diluted? I have a hard time imagining that there's going to be a chiv of hotza'ah just because you took out the wine portion if it's not yet turned into wine. If you haven't yet diluted it, it's hard to imagine. So Amalei Rava, so Rava now responds to both of the challenges of Abai. So first of all, if you carefully read that Mishnah Nida, so it says that it is a dilution, but not of any wine, but Yain HaShironi. Yain HaShironi, Shironian wine. Don't ask me, I don't know where it comes from. But Yain HaShironi could very well be a very special type of wine. It happens to be rough, it happens to be weaker than your typical wine. So there, its dilution ratio is going to be 2 to 1. And so over there, when Yain HaShironi, so it's going to be a ratio of 2 to 1. I'm talking about regular wine. Regular wine requires a ratio of 3 to 1. So that's one way to respond to that Mishnah Nida. And actually, I have another way of responding to that Mishnah Nida, says Rava. Inami hasam mishum chazusa valatame baitfe. The Mishnah Nida over there is getting us to a particular shade of red, a hue. And the Mishnah over there is not giving us the recipe of how to make good wine. The Mishnah over there wants to point to a particular shade of red. And so when the Mishnah says two parts water to one part wine, so it could very well be that as far as wine is concerned, it won't taste good. But that's not the Mishnah's interest. The Mishnah's interest over there is to give us a particular color. Over here, however, when we're talking about how to create wine, so the ratio of water to wine is going to be one part wine to three parts water. So basically, the two Mishnayos, the Mishnah Nida, Mishnah Shabbos, have two different goals. Mishnah Nida, get us to a particular color. The Mishnah here in Shabbos, get us to a good cup of wine. And Rava says to Abai, and let me address now your second question. We haven't diluted the wine yet. And I maintain that one's going to be liable for just carrying the wine, even though it's a quarter of a revius. But he says, but I'll answer that question also, very simply and very basically. Le'inyan Shabbos, midi dechashiv be'inan, v'hanami hachashiv. And as far as Shabbos is concerned, what do you need on Shabbos? You need midi dechashiv, something which is significant. Meaning the reason why these are the shiurim for these particular foods and drinks is because this is now the shiur in which now it serves as being a significant amount. Significant amount doesn't necessarily mean that you could drink it at this point in time. Significant amount means that this is now a meaningful amount to you and I. Once you have a quarter of a revius of wine, that's chashav, that's meaningful. Because now that wine can easily be converted into a cup of wine. All I simply need is water. But already at this point in time, it's chashuv, and as far as the shiurim concerned, the benchmark, the threshold in which it determines chashuv is going to be, I'm sorry, the benchmark in terms of which what the shiur is going to be is that when it is chashuv. Ad kan, that takes us to the back and forth between Rav and Abaye. So therefore, where we stand right now is that when the Mishnah says that when it comes to how much wine one would be liable in order to violate Shabbos, so the Mishnah says kedei mezikas hakos, and after going through Rava's position and the back and forth between Abaye and Rava, well, the way we understand the Mishnah is that you're taking out a quarter of a revius of wine. When diluted, it will get to a revius of a wine beverage that they used to drink back in the day. The time of the Gemara now is going to continue a discussion, and that is as follows. Yavesh, Bikazayas, Divrei Rebbe Nassan. Gemara quotes the Brisa. The Brisa says, now what if the wine is congealed? The wine is so congealed hard that basically now it is a solid. So now that it's in its solid state, how much wine does one have to carry? So, revius obviously is a liquid measurement. And so now we're going to be looking at a solid measurement. And the Gemara tells us that when it comes to dried wine, dried over here meaning congealed, so the amount that one would have to carry in order to be chayv for Shabbos is going to be a kezayis. This is the opinion of Rabbi Nassan. I'm Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef is going to do something which, generally speaking, is what Abaye does. Abaye throughout Shas takes various Tanayim from different locations and strings them together, saying that they're basically working along the same premise. Over here, it happens to be Rabbi Yosef, who was a contemporary of Abaye, and oddly enough, Abaye is going to come into this discussion, but Rabbi Yosef is going to do the same thing over here. And Rabbi Nassan, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amru Davar Echad. The Tanayim of Rabbi Nassan, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda are both in agreement to the same basic premise. And what is the premise? The premise is that when I take a liquid and you solidify it, so a revius of liquid, when solidified, is going to be a kezias. It's going to be the volume of an olive. Now, Rabbi Nassan, Hadamra, now Rabbi Nassan, we already articulated. Rabbi Nassan told us that when the wine congeals and turns solid, one is going to be liable for the transport of the wine when you have a kezias of solid wine, of solidified wine. Fine. Now we have to go over the other sheet of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Tanya. The Gemara here quotes a braisa. The braisa of Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Shisha, Dvar Mikula Beisham, and Mechum Rabbi Silla. According to Rabbi Yehuda, and remember, Rabbi Yehuda is a later Tana, and he is now citing earlier Tanaim, notably the Tanaim of Beisham and Beis Silla. And in six areas in Halacha, you have Kule Beisham and Mechum Rabbi Silla, meaning that most of the time Beis Silla is a Mekel in Halacha. Most of the time Beisham is a Machmer in Halacha. And there are six occasions where Beis Shammai is the Machmer and Beis Hillel is other way around. Beis Shammai is the Mekel and Beis Hillel is the Machmer. Now, I'm sure I said in the past, I've said in the past that these are the only six times. I probably thought that because the Mishnah over here says the number six. And generally speaking, when giving a number, so you figure that these are the only times that the debate. It's interesting, Rashi over here, and Rashi writes it. I'm going to read the Rashi. Vav dvar mikule, lav di'ika hani v'sulo. Rashi says it's not that there's only six. Da'kazi tuva ika. Rashi points out there are others as well. Ela kishe nichnasul kerem b'yav nebe'idu kol echa v'echa na'oso shebiyado b'masechas edios heid Rav Yehuda al elo. It just happens to be that we're talking about Masechta Edios right now. Masechta Edios is a Mishnah found in Seder Nezikin, in which when they went to Yavne, so they had a major assembly of all Tanaim, and on that one day, they collected the various testimonies that they had regarding various halachas. And Rav Yehuda over there, who was in that assembly, so he says, here's what I know regarding the six times that Beis Hillel was a Machmer, Beis Shammai was a Mekel, but Rashi says, but these are the only times, these are the only ones that are recorded by Rav Yehuda at that particular assembly. So Rashi says there are others. So for all the times that I said that these are the only six, so I would like now a moment to retract from that position, at least based on the Rashi here in the Gemara in Shabbos. Anyway, we are only going to be looking at one of them because it is germane to our discussion. Dam Nevela. When it comes to the blood of a Nevela, Beishamim Metamim, Beisil Metamim. So Beishamim says it's Tzara, Beisil says it's Tami. In order to understand this, let's get Tumas Nevela down for a moment very well. Tumas Nevela, if an animal goes unshechted, So that means that it is now going to be an avatuma. It is now subject to tumas nevela. What part of the animals are subject to tumas nevela? The basar, the meat of the animal. So if one were to contact with the meat of an animal that that went unshechted, one is now going to receive tumah. The nevela is an avatuma, and so therefore it's going to transfer to Adam v'Kalim. The tumah will be transferred to both people and to Kalim. And also nevela is metame b'maga uvemasa. It gives off tumah both in contact, physical contact, and also masa if you carry the nevela. Fine, those are the very basics regarding tumas nevela. And now what the Mishnah is describing over here is what if you have the blood of a nevela. Now the blood is not the basar of the nevela. But what if the blood were to congeal? Is congealed blood going to have the status of nevela? That is the debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says tahor, meaning Beis Shammai is of the opinion that blood is simply not going to transmit tumas nevela, neither in its liquid form nor in its solid form. Beis Hillel is of the opinion Beis Hillel says that once the blood congeals, it is now going to be treated like basar, and now it's going to be an av hatumah. I'm Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, av kishetimo Beis Hillel, timo ela bidam sheish bo revius. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda now comments on the opinion of Beis Hillel. Even as Beis Hillel says that it's going to be metame, that is only when you have enough blood there where there is a revius in its liquid state. Because when it congeals, so then it will become the shear of a kazais. How much, one other detail that I forgot to add when talking about tumas nevela, how much basar does one need to come into contact with in order to become tuma? So the amount of nevela is going to be a kazais. And so now, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, when explaining the shita of Beis Hillel, who said that the blood of an animal is going to be subject to tumas nevela, that means that you have to have revius in its liquid form, because when congealed, it's going to become now a kezias. What have we just seen? We just saw that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda also is in agreement to this position, that when I have something in liquid form, and it solidifies, so the conversion ratio is a revius in liquid form will become a kezias in solid form. And so Rabbi Yossi says now, you could take the sheet of Rabbi Nassan that we learned here in Shabbos regarding wine congealing. You could take the position of Beis Hillel, as explained by Rabbi Yehuda, as reported by Rabbi Yehuda, as explained by Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, that when you have blood, a revius of blood is going to be equaling a kezias in its solid state. And so Rabbi Yossi says, good, we have now a match. Amar Abaye, Abaye says to Rabbi Yossi. Now I'm going to add, I'm just a little bit of editorial on my part. Amar Abaye Abaye says, I love doing this. I love stringing together Tanayim. But it happens to be that in this particular case, I don't think these two Tanayim can be strung together. Dilma Lohi. And over here, not necessarily. Rabbi Nassan doesn't necessarily agree to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and also the converse as well. Adkan lokama Rabbi Nassan hachad abai revius ala biyayin dekalish. That when Rabbi Nassan says that you require a revius, that's talking about wine. Wine is very thin, meaning, and you probably thought of this as well, we are assuming that the transference from liquid state to solid state is always going to be the same. That was the Gemara's assumption. But the Gemara is basically saying, you can't say that, meaning when you're looking at liquids, you have to look at the various densities of the various liquids. Blood is very thick. Wine is very thin. The viscosity of the blood is obviously much thicker than that of wine. So when it comes to wine in Rabbi Nassan's position that you need a revius so that it can turn into a kezias, that's what with wine, which has a very thin viscosity. Ava bedam desamech, but blood that's very thick. Kezias la bayi revius. In order to get to kezias, I don't necessarily need a revius of blood. Maybe it could even be less than a revius, but because it's so thick, so therefore you need less blood in order to congeal into a kezias. And inam, and alternatively, ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yudasam, de kazai sagile revius, ela bedam de samech. And the converse, you could say the opposite as well. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says that when you have a kazaias, let's start with a revius. When you have a revius of blood, and that will become a kazaias that's specific by blood, which is very thick. Avayayin de kalash, but when it comes to wine, which is much thinner, kazaias have a yosem revius. It could very well be that if you're starting with a kezias of the uh, of the solid, and it liquefies. It could become, in fact, more than Rivius. And it happens to be that Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, if you ask them the question, how much congealed wine do you need to carry on Shabbos in order to be chayiv? So he would actually say, I would need less, because only by blood, which is very thick, is the conversion ratio going to be one kezayis solid equals one revius liquid. But it happens to be by wine, could very well be that even if I have less than a kezayis of solid, it will amount to a revius in liquid. So the Gemara just basically said, because of the different viscosities of wine and of blood, so we can't necessarily prove that Rabbi Nassan and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, are necessarily agreeing with one another. That kind of takes us to the first end of today's sugya. So in the first half of today's daf, we went over basically two points. One is that when the Mishnah says Mezikas Kos, which is the amount of wine that one would carry to be liable for the Melacha of Otsa'ah, it means the amount of undiluted wine, so that when it's diluted, it would be a revius of wine. How much would that be? A quarter of a revius, based on Rava's ratio of mixture, which is one part wine to three parts water. That was the first thing we did today in the first Talmud. And the second thing we did is, what exactly is going to be the conversion if I took a liquid wine and brought it to its solid state? How much is a revius of wine, which is a liquid measurement, going to be expressed in a solid state? The Gemara's assumption, Rav Yosef's assumption, is that it's based on Rabbi Nassan's statement that it's going to be one revius in liquid state is going to transfer over to being one kezias in solid state. And then the Gemara's subsequent discussion is that would other Tanai necessarily agree with Rabbi Nassan? Debatable. We continue in the Gemara. We're on the bottom of Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're up to the discussion regarding milk. Chalav, how much milk is one going to have to transfer on Shabbos in order to be chayev? Kedei gemia, the amount that you are going to be ingesting in one swallow. So a mouthful of milk. Ibailu, let's assume, obviously this is an exception to the general rule. General rule is that you need a revius of liquids. So let's assume by milk, maybe because of its thickness, maybe because of its nutritional value, but let's assume that the kedei gemia is going to be less than that of a revius. Ibailu kedei, gemia kedei gemia. Now the Gemara wants to know, the word gemia, is it spelled with an ayin or is it spelled with an aleph? Now it is a funny question, because why don't you look at the Mishnah and see how the Mishnah spells it? But part of the Gemara's question is, what is the correct nusach? Meaning, what should be the correct nusach of the Mishnah? Happens to be that we have a nusach of the Mishnah, but is that the correct nusach of the Mishnah? Is it spelled with an aleph or is it spelled with the ayin? Now for us Ashkenazim, so we look at one another and we'd be like, sounds the same. I say gemia with an aleph, sounds just like gemia with an ayin. So us Ashkenazim, as important as our nusach is, and it's the misora of our of generations, nevertheless, somehow we lost the differentiation between aleph and ayin. There is a differentiation. You look at the Rambam. The Rambam writes that you call up a chazan to the amud, and he doesn't know how to make a discernment between an aleph and an ayin, so he can't be a chazan for the amud. The Rambam would go insane if he went to an Ashkenazic minyan, understandably. It's a difference in how it's vocalized. Again, in principle. It obviously is also going to be a difference because there are going to be words in Tanakh with an aleph and an ayin. So obviously it's important to know what is the correct nusach. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Hagmi'ini not ma'ayim, mikadeich. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Bereishis, Parshas Chayisara. So he says, give me a little bit of the water which is in your jug. And there it's spelled with an aleph. So it's very clear, by the way, that they had the correct Masora in terms of the Chumash, and as we're going to see in just a moment, we're going to be saying Pesukim and Navi as well, and it's just now a question of what's the correct Girsa in terms of the Mishnah. So we use the Chumash in order to show us what the correct Girsa is in the Mishnah. It's with an Aleph. Ibailu, the next question as we turn now to the top of Ein Zayin Amud Bey is Garinim o Garinim, with an Aleph or with an Ayin? Amar Rav Barula v'nigra me'erkecha. You're going to be deducted from your value, right? This is the parsha in Bechukosai, dealing with Erchin. And here, if a person cannot pay, so he is given an adjustment. The pasuk v'nigra, you're going to deduct. And how is that connected to garinim? Because when you have a seed that's in a fruit, so it's actually going to be deducting from the value of the volume of the fruit. And anyway, the pasuk tells us it's with an ayin. Ibailahu, next question, amamos or amamos, when dealing with coals, glowing coals, is it spelled with an alpha or is it spelled with an ayin? I'm Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi, arazim lo amamu began alukim. Pasuk in Yecheskel, speaking about the cedars that where its glow did not die down. So amamu is spelled there with an ayin. Ibailahu ma'amtsim o me'amtsim. When dealing with the word omets, which in just a moment we're also going to say is synonymous with the word otsem, so is it with an alpha or an ayin? I'm Rabbi Chia bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, v'otsem einav meros berah. Pasuk in Yeshayahu, and the otsem einav, he shut his eyes from seeing that which is bad, so you see it's spelled with an ayin. Tanu Rabbanan motzi chalav shel behema kedei gemia. When taking out cow's milk, so cow's milk is something that we humans consume, and so therefore the shear is going to be a mouthful of the milk. Chalav shel isha v'luvan shel beitza. Now, what if it happens to be mother's milk? The transport of mother's milk. So, adults do not drink mother's milk. And so, what is going to be the smallest shear? And again, really, we should have learned this. The Gemara should have presented this already, but that's the Derech HaGemara, where the basic information comes a little bit later. Why isn't the shear going to simply be the amount of milk that's ingested by a baby who's normally ingesting the mother's milk? So we'll see in tomorrow's daf, the Gemara is going to give us a set of rules in terms of how the Chachamim arrived at their particular shirim. Anyway, we'll get to it tomorrow. But anyway, the Chal Shalisha, when it comes to the mother's milk, and the white of an egg, k'deilitein bin mishifa shel kilor. That's the amount that is used to dilute the ointment for the eye. So we already saw this yesterday, that when it comes to the eye salve, so they had it diluted. It was a very thick ointment. And it required dilution, and the dilution required either a little bit of water, or as we're learning right now, a little bit of mother's milk, a little bit of human milk, or a little bit of egg white. Kilor kedei lashuf b'mayim. Now, when it comes to the actual ointment itself, the amount necessary where, once I dilute it, so then it's going to be functional and then it's going to be usable, that's how much kilor a person would have to take out in order to be subject to the malach of otzah. By ravashi kedei shifa, kedei achiza v'shifa, teku. Now the Gemara says that when we're talking about the amount of oil that's going to go on the applicator, the amount of the ointment that's going to go on the applicator, are we talking about the amount necessary for the eye? Or you also have to take into consideration that whenever you're putting something on an applicator, you're going to need a little bit more because some of it's going to remain on the applicator. So this shear that we're giving, the Gemara is asking an extraordinarily detailed question, is it the amount specific for the eye? Or with the understanding that you're going to need to take a little bit more because some is left on the applicator. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Devash, we turn our attention now to honey, kedei liten alakasis. So back then, honey was put on a wound in order to help remedy the wound. Tana, the Gemara quotes a braisa, kedei liten alpikasis. It's basically to put on the mouth of the wound. So by Ravashi al kasis apuma de kula kasis o dilma amur sakama de kasis la fuke hudrana delo. The Gemara now again asks an extraordinarily specific and detailed question regarding the amount of honey that goes on the wound. So we're speaking only about the mouth of the wound, but even as we speak of the mouth of the wound, are we talking about putting the entire honey over? Sorry, are we talking about putting the honey over the entire surface area of the wound? Or are we just talking about putting it on the edge of the wound only so that it doesn't, well, I'll use modern terminology, it doesn't get infected, bacteria doesn't grow over there. So the Gemara now wants to know exactly how much honey are we putting on the edge of the wound? How much of the wound are we looking to cover? Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. I'm just curious, although I'll ask the question, I don't have an answer. The Gemara is over here describing a wound. We're talking about objective measurements. Is a wound an objective amount? Meaning the Gemara is starting off with the assumption that the wound is, you know, a wound. And so it's just a question of how much honey goes on that wound. Is there an objective amount to the actual wound itself, where the Gemara is using that as the baseline for measuring the amount of honey that goes on that wound? Apparently the answer is yes, but just I don't fully understand that. Wounds come in all shapes and sizes. Anyway, continuing in the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Kol Mashe Barach Kadosh Baruch Hu Balamo, labara davar echad levatala. Gemara takes us into Agadata, and here a little bit of Ashkafa. And that is, everything in this world that was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a purpose. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not create anything in this world that does not have purpose. Many of the times we look at various parts of the biology and just in the world at large, and we wonder, why did Hashem make that? Okay, so that's our lack of knowledge. But as far as the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, everything is created with a design and with a plan. And the Gemara here just cites a number of examples where we see this in the world. Bara shablul lekasis. So some sort of either a slug or a leech. So back in the day, this doesn't sound appetizing. It doesn't sound pleasant. But if you had a wound, so they would just simply put a leech right on it. So the Gemara says, so you wonder what the purpose of the leech is? Kasis, it's there for the wound. Barzvub lesira. If a person has some sort of boil, so they they used the zvuv. Not exactly sure what the procedure is. Doesn't really matter. It had a purpose. Yatush lenachash. Also, if somebody was bitten by a snake, so they somehow used the yatush in order to remedy the snake bite. Venachash lechfifis. If a person has a boil, so somehow venom was extracted from a snake, or maybe something else was extracted from the snake, in order to counteract the boil. Somehow it remedies the boil. And some imamis la'akrav. And also another type of poison was used for the bite of a scorpion. Hey Che'avilu. Now the Gemara over here gives us here just a small, short recipe. Maisi chadu uchma v'chadu chivra. You take one that's black, you take one that's white, v'shaka lehu, and you cook them together, v'shaifa leng, and you rub it onto your wound. Okay. Anyway, despite the fact that in terms of the details of the examples that the Gemara gave, not really that familiar, and I cannot be that helpful in terms of identifying what they are, but certainly the idea is that hashkafically understand that everything in this world serves a purpose, even the things that we happen not to be familiar with. Tana Rabbanan. Chamisha Amos Hain. Emas Chalash al Gibor. The Gemara quotes a Braisa in terms of things where you find that which is stronger and larger are in fact intimidated by something which is smaller. So generally speaking, the way the world works is that something that's larger intimidates that which is smaller. That's generally speaking how the world works. However, five notable exceptions where you have the Ema of the Chalash al Gibor, where the fear of that which is smaller is going to be on the larger, meaning the larger is going to be scared of the smaller. The Gemara here goes through five different examples. Number one, Amos Mavgia Alari. So you have this small little bug, and it terrifies the lion. Now, what this small little creature is, okay, not going to be that helpful, but nevertheless, it terrifies the lion, and the reason why it terrifies the lion, Rashi points out over here, is that it makes a loud sound. And the sound just scares the lion. So the lion is terrified of this small little creature, whatever this small creature may be. Number two, Amos Yatush al Apil. All right, a gnat by an elephant. Right, this is a classic depiction that that even nowadays that we have. That the elephant is scared. Nowadays we're scared of a mouse. The Gemara over here points to a gnat. Anyway, Rashi over here gives a description. What happens is that the gnat goes into the nostril, and it must cause the elephant much pain. Anyway, elephant is terrified of it. Amos samamis al akrav. Samamis, some sort of small little insect, and the scorpions are terrified by them. And again, Rashi says same thing over here. Amos sanunis al hanesher. The sanunis. Rashi describes it. I don't know what Rashi is describing, but basically Rashi says that what happens is that it goes into the wings of the eagle. Nesher, by the way, probably is more properly translated as a vulture. But anyway, regardless of what the Nesher is, right? Everyone's been thinking it's been an eagle for a very long time. Anyway, so what happens is that this Sanvanis creature gets stuck within the wings of the eagle, and the eagle could not spread its wings. And so therefore the eagle is terrified of the Sanvanis. Amos Kilvis al Livyasan. And the Livyasan is terrified of the Kilvis. Okay. Again, exactly what the Kilvis is. Some sort of small creature. right? Some sort of small fish. Anyway, the Levi's son is terrified of it. Rashi over here says the same thing. Actually, Rashi says it goes into the ears of the Levi's son. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Maikra Hamavlig Shud Al Az. Pasuk in Amos speaks to this idea that it instills its fear on something which is larger. So these are five instances where the smaller is terrifying the larger. Rabbi Zera Ashkach Rabbi Yehuda Davekai Apischa Debei Chamua. Rabbi Zera finds Rabbi Yehuda one day standing by his father-in-law's house. V'chazir Dave Bedicha Daite. And he saw that Rabbi Yehuda happened to have been in a particularly good mood. V'ibay Minei Kola Chalale Alma Have Amarle. And if I ask him some of the quote-unquote sillier riddles of the world, he's going to answer me. And so, generally speaking, Rabbi Yehuda has a limited amount of patience, like we all do. And generally speaking, if I ask a question which seems a little bit off the beaten path, he just simply wouldn't have the patience for that question. But I caught him on a good day, I caught him in a good mood. And as a result of that, I think today will be a good day in terms of asking him the questions, which under normal circumstances, I know he will not have the patience to answer. Amar Leih, and here we are, with six questions that are asked by Rabbi Zera to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is going to answer them all. Number one. My time is in the Hadar Imre. So you'll notice that when walking in the flocks, the goat go in front of the sheep. Can you explain to me that phenomena? Amalei Briyasa Sha'olam, Ki Briyasa Sha'olam, Debrecha, Chashucha Vahadar Nehura. He says, sure, no problem at all. Look at Briyasa Olam. What comes first? First, the night comes, and then the day comes. The night represents the dark. The day, obviously, is light. Goats, generally speaking, come in a darker shade, and then the sheep is coming in a white shade. And that explains the order. Okay? I don't fully understand Rav Yehuda's answer, but okay, that's fine. And number two, my time, ahanim achsim, ahanim iglin. Look at the sheep versus the goat. So the goat is not covered. Its tail is very short, and its privates are not covered. Meanwhile, when it comes to the sheep, its tail is very long, and its privates are covered. So the Rav Yehuda answers, ahanim de machsinan minayu, machsayan. He says, look, what is the sheep producing for us? It's producing clothing. Meaning, the sheep provides a covering for us. So therefore, Mida Keneged Mida, the sheep now has a covering for itself. The goat, which does not provide covering for us, meaning we speak about the goat's hair, and we speak about the sack that's produced from the goat's hair, but it does not make for clothing. And it is, therefore, you wear the sack when you're in a sign of mourning, right? Mordechai. Right, he was belavush shak. He was wearing goat's hair clothing. It doesn't normally cover a human, and since they are not providing for us a covering, so therefore mida keneged mida, they themselves are not covered. Third question: my tamagam la zutar gnufte. So how come the tail of the camel is so short? So the Gemara says mishum da achal kise, because he eats thorns, and because he eats thorns, so if its tails were longer, the tail would be dragging on the thorns, and so that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu made the tails of the camels particularly short. Number four, my tamatura aricha gnufte. How come the ox has a particularly long tail? Mishum de dair be'agme, because it lives in the swamp, uvaila kakushi bake, and it wants to swat away all the gnats that are bothering him in the swamp. Fifth question, my tamakarna de kimsa richiche. So the Gemara says, why is it that the antennas of the grasshopper are soft? Mishum de dair be'chafe, it lives amongst the willows, vikashe, and if the antennas were hard, naja vistiavasa. What's going to happen is that the antennas are going to break off, and it will, and if it doesn't have any give, and then the grasshopper is going to be blinded. Amr Shmuel Haiman Dabai de Lisme Lakimsa. Shmuel says, in fact, that if you want to ever blind a grasshopper, so lishlafuna lakarne, take away its antennas, because without its antennas, it no longer has anything protecting its eyes, and it will, in fact, get blinded. My time, I timid Tarnagolsa, midle la'ela, and our sixth question that Rabbi Zera is asking Rabbi Yehuda. The eyelids of the chicken, so it doesn't blink down, meaning the top eyelid is not going over the bottom eyelid, but just the opposite. Its lower eyelid goes over its top eyelid. Why should that be? So the Gemara says, the diary adape, the Isle Kitra mit Avra. So the Gemara says because it has smoke and If it didn't blink in the manner which it did, so the smoke would go right into the rooster's eyes. Okay, Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of the questions and some other odds and ends. Why the Gemara inserts these particular sections over here, meaning it's enjoyable. I got it, but what is it doing over here? Not particularly sure, but anyway, we have a little bit more to go. And that is the following. The Gemara now is going to be assuming that Lashon HaKodesh, and in this case Aramaic as well, has in it, basically, in the word, its definition. So basically, we're looking at etymology of various words, and we're looking at how the word itself really is serving as the definition of that word. You'll see what I mean. The Gemara is going to be giving, I counted 21 different examples. Dasha. In Aramaic, Dasha means the door. And why? Because Dasha is a contraction of the two words Derech Sham. That's the way you walk in. Darga. Darga in Aramaic is a ladder. Derech Gad. The way to get to the second floor, the way to get to the roof is by a ladder. So you see that the Darga is a contraction of the words Derech Gad. Mitkulisa. Mitkulisa is in Aramaic the word that's used to describe a dip. And it is a contraction of the words Masai Tichle. When is it going to finish? Dips end up lasting for a very long time. And so therefore, the word itself, the etymology of the word, comes from the question, when is it finally going to be done? Da Besa. Da Ve'esav Ba. The word Besa in Aramaic, just like the Hebrew word, means a house. And it is a contraction of the word Ba Ve'esav Ba. I'm going to go in, that's the base, and Esav Ba, and I'm going to sit in it. Next, Bikasa, Be'akta. Bikasa is a small little, it's a very narrow house, and it's described not as the word bias or Besa, but rather it's described as a Bikasa, and the Gemara says Be'akasa. It's basically, it's really constricted, it's really tight. So that is the contraction of the word Bikasa. Kofta. Kofta over here, Rashi gives a lot of explanations in terms of what Kofta is. But the first explanation, Rashi, is that's machteshes. It is a mortar. And kof, let's turn it over, visiv, and let's sit on top of it. Right? That, so you see the word kof is a contraction of those two words, turn it over, and sit on it. Livne, a brick. Livne bene. You make a house of bricks, it'll go to your children. So you see the word livne, in it is the word bene. You'll have it for generations. Hutza, hutza is a reed. Chatzitza. When you make a mat of reeds, it creates a partition between two areas. Chitzva. Chitzva is some sort of jug. Shechutzav mayim en nahar. With the jug, you're able to hollow out water from the river, meaning take water out of the river. Kuza. Kuza is a tiny jug. And you see in the word kuza, the word kazeh. Yeah, just about this. All right, not a lot. And shutisa. Shutisa is the Aramaic word to describe the hadas. Right, the hadas, by the way, comes in a lot of Aramaic terms. I'm familiar right now with two. Asa is one, and right now the shutisa. A shutisa, by the way, it could be the bad. It could be the stem of the hadas. Anyway, so what is the word shutisa? What's the etymology of the word? Shtusa, a person looks like a fool. What's the connection between the hadas and a person looking like a fool? So, Rashi says that when you go to the chasna, so it used to be, the minhag was, that the men would be dancing with the hadassim. Okay, the hadassim was a siman bracha anyway, and when the men danced, they looked foolish. And that's a good thing at a chasna, meaning you want to make people smile and laugh, and you want to dance, and you want to look a little foolish. And so the word shutisa is included in it. The etymology is shtus. You look foolish. Meshichla. Meshichla is some sort of bowl, some sort of washing bowl. So, me'ishe mashe kule. Everybody washes from it. That's the meshichla. Meshichalta, it's a smaller bowl. So Mashia Kalasa. So again, you look at the word, it's a contraction of the Kala uses it to wash her face. So it's a smaller bowl. Asisa. The Asisa. Also seemingly a mortar. Chaserta. In the word Asita, you see the word Chaserta, it's lacking. Buchna, that's the pestle, that's pounding in the asisa. So, bova akena. So, you look at the word buchna, it's a contraction of the word, let's come and let's hit. Levusha, clothing, lo busha, removes embarrassment. Glima, shenasas bo kegola. You're wearing a large overcoat. You now look totally figureless. The coat just simply drapes down over your body. Gulsa, so gali ve'esev. Gulsa is a coat. Now, the coat over here, it's a longer coat, much like the bekesha that's worn by the chassidim. And so in order to sit down, you have to roll up the bottom, galei ve'esev, and then you're able to sit down. Purya, the Aramaic word for the bed, shepar v'ravan aleha, that's where the mitzvah per revu is done. Bor zinka, so a pit, bor zenaki, it's an empty pit, that's the bor zikna, so you see the contraction of zenaki in the word zinka. Sudra, now sudra is a turban that was worn by Talmid Chachamim in the time of the Gemara. And what do you see in the word sudra? Sod Hashem le'reyach. Secrets of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are given to those who fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is encrypted, contracted into the word sudra. Apadna, apadna is the Aramaic word for a palace. Apiska, dain. This particular entrance. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the 21 words that are described in the Gemara, where basically the word is a contraction of its meaning. Tanu Rabbanan, and finally, let's conclude with the following. Shlosha, Kozman Shemaskinim Asifim Gvura. When it comes to these three items, as they get older, they get stronger. Ve'elohen, and they are Dag, Nachash, Ve'chazir. The fish, the snake, and the pig. As they get older, they get stronger. Let's quickly recap our morning. We did basically three things this morning. No, more than three topics. But in terms of halacha, we covered three basic areas in halacha. Our big topic as we are now into the eighth parak of the Masechta is shiurim. How much does a person need to carry of the various items in order to violate the Shabbos? Our Mishnah opening up the eighth parak talked about various liquids. And the first liquid mentioned in the Mishnah is yayin. How much wine? So the Mishnah's phrase is kedei mezika sakos. The Gemara's conclusion is it's the amount of wine necessary so that when it's diluted, it's going to get to a revius. And based on the ratio that Rava gave this morning, it's three parts water to one part wine. The second discussion that we had in our Gemara, well, let's call this 1B, is that what is going to be the conversion ratio between wine in its liquid form to wine in its solid form? So when the wine congeals and now it's in solid form, so what is going to be the shear? Rabbi Nassen says, a kezias. A revius of wine in liquid form converts to a kezias of wine in solid form. The Gemara then went into a discussion as to whether or not other Tanaim also subscribe to this viewpoint. Presumably Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah and Adios would agree to this, but the Gemara says not necessarily because he was talking about blood, and the viscosity of wine and blood obviously are not the same. And so therefore we cannot assume that the conversion rates are going to be the same for wine and blood. We moved on to discussion regarding milk. How much milk would one be transporting on Shabbos to be subject to the malacha of hotza'ah? Kidei gemia. The Gemara just uses an opportunity to just clean up a couple of areas in which we're not sure whether it's an aleph or whether it's an ayin. The hagma of our Mishnah, the kidei gemia. Should it be with an iron, or should it be with an iron, or should it be with an aleph? By the way, odd that, and I didn't point this out when we did the daf today, odd that the Gemara's conclusion is that it should be with an aleph, and meanwhile the Mishnah writes it with an iron. Okay. In our Girsa in the Mishnah, it's with an iron. I'm looking back at the Mishnah, I see others have the Girsa with the aleph. But, okay, anyway. Certainly interesting. But when it comes to cow's milk, it's going to be a mouthful of the cow's milk, meaning how much that we generally put in our mouth when we're gulping one gulp of the cow's milk. The Gemara talked about cow's milk versus human milk. It's a different shear for human milk, for the milk of a mother. Anyway, and let's just continue in our review. And then we spoke about honey. When it comes to honey, the amount of honey that is applied to a wound, we learned in the Gemara it's going to be the opening of the wound. Even in that, the Gemara even tried to further fine-tune and give a higher definition to the to how much honey we're talking about, although the Gemara left it inconclusive. In terms of Agadata today, here are the topics that we covered in Agadata. Number one, everything is created for a purpose in this world. The Gemara cited five examples, but the hashkafa to walk away from today's daf is that everything in this world has a purpose, even though we don't readily see it. Second point of Hashkafa is that there are occasions in in the Briyas HaOlam, where there the smaller is going to be intimidating that which is larger. The Gemara gave five different examples. Okay. Next, Rabbi Zera caught Rabbi Huda in a good mood and used it as an opportunity to ask him six different questions regarding various natural phenomena and Niflaus HaBore, the wonders of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he tried to gain a better understanding into the natural order of things. Why this, why that? And Rabbi Huda answered all of his questions. And finally, etymology of the word. Words contain their definition in the words themselves. Now, is this true by all the time? I don't know. But the Gemara gave 21 different examples this morning where the definition of the word is found in the word itself. The word is basically a contraction of its very definition. And finally, the last piece of Agadata that we ended today is that as you get older, typically we tend to get weaker. However, that's not true by the fish, the snake, and the pig.